Hey, Blair! Blair, have you seen Fuchs?
I don't want to stay out here anymore. I want to come back inside. Funny things. I hear funny things out here.
Did you come across Fuchs?
It ain't Fuchs. It ain't Fuchs. I'm not going to harm anybody, and there's nothing wrong with me. And if there was, I'm all better now. I'd like to come back inside. Now, you got my promise.
We'll see.
Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute, man. I want to come back inside, don't you understand? I'm all right. I'm much better. And I won't harm anybody. And you've got to let me come back inside.
Welcome to the Three Film Egos. I'm your hirsute host, Isaac Jensen, and with me as always is Utah's whitest black child, Clayton Godby.
I don't smoke.
And our resident vegan dreadlocked Portlandier, Ryan Cragen.
I'm not talking about tobacco.
This is a film discussion podcast where we each pick a film based on a predetermined theme or topic and then talk about anything but. There will be tangents. There will not be spoiler alerts. Consider yourselves warned. On this episode, Monsters.
So we got Monsters.
Yeah, Monsters, we had The Thing, Troll Hunter, and Cloverfield, all movies that I liked again.
Yeah.
Who's going to start?
Fun.
I think wherever we start, we should talk about Troll Hunter or Cloverfield next to each other because they have similar elements.
Fuck yes, so, which is so either, strange.
Yeah, so we can either start with one of those or we can start with The Thing.
Maybe we'll talk about Cloverfield and Troll Hunter and then do The Thing.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a good order.
Because they're totally different movies, but you're right, that those two definitely were similar. Well, not really, but they're shot in kind of the same similar manner, where
yeah.
You've got
they,
faux documentary.
They have that, yeah, found footage yeah. Aesthetic.
Yeah.
So maybe Cloverfield first?
All right.
400 seconds.
I chose Cloverfield, never having seen it before, purely based off the fact that it was I had heard that it was kind of J.J. Abrams' baby. I knew that he was, you know, this is a movie that he was really excited about. And I like a lot of his other stuff, so that was particularly it. What this movie ends up being, well, it's kind of shot as a, you know, first person, some guy with a camera that's just sort of filming a party for his friend who's moving away to Japan. And then all hell breaks loose, and we end up following a group of people around New York as it's getting terrorized by some unknown creature. They don't ever call it Godzilla, probably because they couldn't.
Not.
It looks exactly like God fucking Zilla. What are you talking about, Clayton?
I don't know, dude. It's dropping all sorts of little baby creatures and stuff like that.
Right. It took it to the next level, but it was definitely kind of Godzilla-ish to me, I feel like. You've got a giant dinosaur-like guy that's just cruising through, you know, I don't know. Some parts of this movie.
I'd agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of bought into the idea of how it was shot and I could handle it. The shaky cam didn't bother me so much. Some of the scenes were just a little bit too coincidental. Like, what are the chances that they're on the bridge when he smashes it? Or what are the chances that they're on the street where the Statue of Liberty's head ends up after it gets knocked off? You know? But, I mean, what are the chances that fucking Godzilla ends up in New York? So I can put that aside because this is a fun movie to watch, I thought. I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah,
I thought it was going to suck, to tell you the truth.
Really?
Yeah, I was kind of afraid. I was kind of afraid that it was going to be crappy. Because it wasn't shot by Abrams, you know, I just heard it was an idea. But people don't necessarily take his ideas and run with them the right way.
Yeah, I think I'd heard enough about it to expect to at least not hate it. I mean, I didn't really know what to expect. I think my expectations were low enough that I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very entertaining, very fun. I think the documentary style or the found footage style through the editing was very effective because it kept cutting in and out with what was taped over in those
right.
You know, few scenes.
Yeah.
But however, there were a few scenes I thought felt too directed. Primarily the scene where they were going for some kind of emotional effect, like when he's capturing the main dude talking to his mother on the phone. It didn't feel like that should have been there. Like it felt like that was too like scripted or too emotional. like it was perfectly captured, like in its entirety, which, you know, nothing else really is.
Absolutely. I mean, there are also ridiculous parts where they run across all of New York and then still have all enough energy to climb up an entire building via the stairs and then back down.
Yeah.
And you know, they're running this whole fucking movie. Like, that's impossible to do. But it's a movie. And this is particular.
Right.
I don't know. It kind of has conflicting styles because you want to believe that it's just found footage that actually happened. But parts of it are just too surreal to actually be completely consumed in that idea.
Yeah.
And some of my problems with it were that it felt so directed and the scenes were so unnatural and impossible sometimes. I wasn't bothered by the shaky camera. And I especially like Isaac. I especially liked the cutting back to older scenes because that's really real. But then even that felt too much like a plot device, you know, to give these characters some background. Like, here's your background to why he wants to go and find this girl in her apartment. You know, like in case you forgot, here's them on their weekend a couple months ago.
Yeah.
You know, so I did find myself a little bit annoyed by that.
Yeah, I also think that it's a little bit disingenuous to his brother. He was more concerned about this chick than his own brother. And that's not how it would be for me. I don't think.
Right.
Some girl that was not with me anymore is probably not first priority over my own brother.
And for all intents and purposes, they just had a one-night stand. I mean, he might have had feelings for her, but there really wasn't any substantial relationship there.
Exactly. So I didn't really care for her all that much. I was more concerned to just get the fuck out of the city, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just not romantic enough to buy into what he was going for. Because I would probably just be trying to get out.
Yeah, no, exactly. I'm with you on that completely.
And along that line, I would be trying to get out. There's no way I would be holding that camera through the whole movie, you know, like HUD or whatever, for the majority of the movie. There are monsters attacking him, like hacked while holding the camera at some point. Or like there are his friends being attacked or they're trying to make their way through crowds. And he somehow has the idea that it's more important to capture this moment and document it so that the world will know than to keep himself alive. It was just too unreal.
Yeah.
A little bit. Although I think I have been in a mind frame with the camera where I'm starting to disregard my own self just to be able to capture what I'm saying. But the nature of what's happening, yeah, it didn't feel real that anyone would decide I'd rather document this than actually try and get away from it.
It was a very bold choice in directing to do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like you could have shot this movie with the exact same script without the shaky cam and without it being handheld footage that, you know, that you found after how the fuck would have, you know, lasted through the nuclear explosion. That's another question that we can bring up. But I don't know. I bought into it because it was a thrill. I mean, this is a thriller for sure. I thought it was great scenes. Marlena's death scene, you know, after she just kind of, you know, they just take her away and she just blows up in that room. That was badass.
Yeah, that was so fast, too. Like,
yeah.
You almost didn't have time to process what was happening.
Sometimes when you kill off major characters that fast out of the blue, it's just too shocking. You're like, whoa.
I
kind of like that scene. but only kind of.
No, I was ready for some change, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of at first resisted the element of, you know, someone wanting to document this kind of thing. But then when the first explosion happens and the head of the Statue of Liberty rolls right across the street, and then in the shot you see dozens of people with their cell phones and cameras just standing there taking pictures, I was like, oh yeah, we live in this kind of, you know, narcissistic information age where everyone wants to, you know, put up whatever on YouTube and get a million hits.
Right.
So
they want to post about the Statue of Liberty first on Facebook.
Yeah. So at first I was like, this is silly. Who would do this? And then they showed that scene. And I was like, oh yeah, everyone would do this.
I don't know. I think if I was running through a subway tunnel, being chased by weird fucking creatures, the camera's going to be my least important priority.
Yeah. As soon as he turned on that night vision and saw that they were in a tunnel with, like, how many were there? I don't know. A bunch of creepy little guys that are going to eat them. Dude, that's the point at which I drop the camera and just run as fast as I can. But, and he somehow is holding it mostly, I feel like it would be shakier than what he is doing. He doesn't know how to use the camera when he first gets it. And some of my home videos of me holding the camera, I'm looking at the ground most of the time. And I don't know. It's just, I don't know. A lot of the way that it was captured, I don't think was realistic.
The movie has to be watchable.
That's true.
Exactly. It was shaky enough that some people don't even like it because it's too shaky.
Yeah, I heard stories of people actually vomiting in the theater. Because of, motion sickness.
Mm. I didn't feel like that at all.
Let's talk
happened. I almost did that in the Bourne Ultimatum. That movie was ridiculous.
That was worse.
Than Cloverfield.
So let's talk about the actual monster in the film. I guess it is a Godzilla type monster in that it, came out of the sea and is destroying the city. It didn't really look like a big dinosaur. It looked more like kind of an insect.
Kind of.
But I guess my big problem with this is I think they showed too much of the monster. I think they should have left a lot more to the imagination, especially at the end when we see almost all of it in a single shot where the monster eats HUD. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think maybe it's just because it's obvious it's CG, but I think having the monster stay kind of between buildings and behind things, it would have been more effective.
Right.
I completely agree with you. Yeah.
Especially because we're dealing with just that camera. What are the chances? I don't know if you've ever been to New York. Seeing past a building when you're in New York is impossible if you're on the street because all you see are buildings.
Exactly.
The chances that you're going to see that creature running around are very slim.
See that creature several times. Like he captures it at first. You can barely see it, but he does capture it when the monster first attacks the Statue of Liberty. You get like a little bit of a shot later. They kind of reveal a little bit of what the creature looks like while they're in the electronics store from other TVs. Mm-hmm. But that should have been most of what you saw. Like, that should have been the most that you saw of the creature. And them intersecting the creature so many times, I think, is just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like every single time they had the camera on, they're running into the monster.
Because the whole idea is that he's going to go after that girl, and that's why. But, I'm just going to go out of a limb here and say that if that happens, it's kind of every man for himself at that point.
Probably.
Like, I'm not running across the town to try to save a girl. Like, she can save herself, for God's sake. If she can't, too bad. There's a monster.
Well, you don't know what love is.
I just know what me dying is not going to change you dying, like getting us both killed isn't a good idea, If we can both get out independently, then fuck yeah.
And that was a pretty intense part though, when they go up the one building and jump across to the other. That I think was one of the most scary parts for me, just because I have such a fear of falling.
Oof.
Like there is no way.
And we're talking about buildings in New York that are leaning and burning,
Yeah.
They were like 30 floors up, something like that.
Yeah, but it still brings up other memories of real shit like that that has happened in our lifetime, And so you definitely think about that. I don't, at least I did, kind of.
Yeah, I did too. Throughout the entire film, I was thinking that this movie might be trying to capitalize on our, 9/11 fears and memories.
Yeah.
Really?
Did you guys get that?
I don't know if it was trying to capitalize. I think they were just trying to do a fresh take on Godzilla, which is kind of how I came away from it. Yeah, just kind of like their own version of it.
It didn't have to be New York City. It didn't have to be Manhattan.
But that's what Godzilla always destroys.
No, Godzilla always destroys Tokyo.
Well, he destroyed Tokyo, but in the American version, it has to be New York. Who cares about L.A.? If you had that thing destroying L.A., no one would give a shit. They'd be like, oh. Yeah, that should have happened a long time ago.
Could have been Portland, though.
No one gives a shit here. Everyone would be like, oh, there's a big monster.
There aren't enough tall buildings.
There aren't.
I mean,
Yeah, there's hardly LA, any buildings here.
LA is probably the only other city it would work in, and yeah, it's probably like, no one would care, I guess.
Yeah, ooh, there goes Hollywood.
Good. I want to see this kind of shitty movie again.
I don't know. I think you just can't overanalyze this movie. I mean, there's the other thing, like the battery, the never-ending battery. I don't know. Every camera I've ever had, the battery shot pretty fast.
Yeah,
especially if you've got that. Yeah, if you've got that light on too. Yeah, right. So I mean, that is one hell of a battery on that camera.
Yeah, it's definitely nitpicky. It's nitpicky to tear apart the film on these kind of levels.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fantasy movie.
I don't know, though.
But the thing is that it's definitely fantasy, but they try to make it so realistic by the way it's shot, though. And so then you can kind of nitpick it, because they're trying to shoot it like it could possibly have happened. Like, this is really just found footage, you know, of whatever happened. So if you're going to do that, you kind of have to have believable physics and believable props.
Yeah, I feel like the idea of, hey, what if, you know, a digital camera was with some people when a monster attacks New York City, they start sitting down and fleshing out the plot, figuring out, you know, how do we make these people feel like real people? Oh, we had a cutting back and forth. But they should have come across some of these contradictions and impossible, you know, plot holes like we did. And I think that, you know, pretty early on in the production of this movie, they should have abandoned it and made it more conventional of storytelling.
Well, see, they could have interjected conveniences, which I think they are okay with, because they had conveniences like the bridge breaking when they were on it, or, you know, being on the street where the Statue of Liberty's head lands. But they could have, like, been in the mall and been like, oh, here's some fucking cameras in this electronics store. Here's
but
some batteries.
That would have felt exactly like that, though. That would have felt like, oh,
convenient. But at least it would have worked out, though. It's better than having an unexplained thing. Maybe, at least to me. I don't know. They probably had this discussion.
I feel like they're hoping people won't notice, and that's just not excellent filmmaking.
Well, not necessarily. I think for what this is, I mean, I think it had a relatively low budget. I think
$25 million is not low.
That's low for a Hollywood monster movie.
I guess you're right. If you're going to have lots of explosions.
Yeah, but I think you can see that money was spent on computer graphics, because I found that in several scenes it looked like a set. You know what I mean? It kind of like maybe it was just the depth of the camera or something, but it looked like it was a constructed set as opposed to a real location. But with this kind of movie, because it was just fun to watch, just, you know, a thrilling adventure, I'm willing to suspend disbelief. Like, of course, no one in their right mind would stick around to document this because they're going to die. But, I mean, that's what the movie is. We're demanding authenticity of a movie whose central premise is there's a monster invading New York.
Good,
that's true.
And in fairness, I did suspend belief enough. And these things come to my head, but if I'm having a good time watching the movie, then I kind of don't give a shit.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And I definitely felt this way when I watched this movie. I will watch this movie again.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So
I've seen it twice now, and I'm pretty much done. I think that's how many times I'm going to watch it.
You're Cloverfield.
Yeah, I think two will probably be good enough for me. But I thought it was enjoyable. I mean, not high art by any means, but fun.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Fun.
But we're talking monsters.
Monsters. How did you feel
about monster movies?
Yeah, I don't feel like the monster was terribly original.
Well, he was kind of like a lizard thing with tentacles that dropped other spider things.
The spiders were awesome.
I don't know. That's kind of original, but also just how does a being like that exist? How did it get born? I don't know. Like, it was never brought that it was like otherworldly. It's supposed to be from this world. I was confused by that. Like, what a strange being.
Yeah, and in the context of this film, no one ever finds out, so we don't ever get to know. I mean, it's just like with the original Godzilla. There's people who speculate, but I don't think they ever actually find out in the movie. It's just, you know, this is here now. How do we deal with it?
Yeah, I was kind of shocked at how fast the military seemed to be there. Like, how are there tanks in downtown? Like, how are there tanks in Manhattan instantly?
Yeah.
Like, did they... I have a hard time believing that there's just this giant, you know, army depot in the middle of Manhattan that's just ready to roll and kick ass at a moment's notice. And how the
maybe
fuck
there
did
is
they
now because
yeah,
of that.
How do they evacuate the entire, how do you evacuate Manhattan in that amount of time? It's not possible. But
there are camera cuts, so maybe that's huge time elapses.
Yeah, and I think they were down just chilling on the subway platform for a while. Maybe they were there for several hours, and that accounts for some of that. I don't know.
Well, not necessarily, because the film kind of starts around midnight of whatever night that is. It's like 11 or midnight when the first explosion happens, and the film ends around 6 a.m. So there's only a six-hour span. And yeah, you're not evacuating all of Manhattan in 6 hours.
Not going to happen. Not a chance.
And those streets look crazy empty.
Yeah. So unless people are just
like
hiding
the
in their
movie
buildings.
Less and less.
Yeah.
The more
we
analyze it.
Yeah, the more we poke holes into it, it's fairly easy to do. I mean, there are glaring issues with it, but at the same time, I think you just can't take it too seriously.
Right.
We just can't do that. So should we go into Cloverfield Part 2, also known as Troll Hunter?
there are a lot of
Sorry, what was that?
I said it's Norwegian. I called it Sweden, but it's actually Norwegian.
It's Norwegian, yeah.
Yeah. So Norwegian Cloverfield, Troll Hunter, has similarities in that it's kind of this mock documentary. These students investigating these bear killings, they think are bear creatures, stumble across this hunter guy that ends up being a troll hunter, hunting these trolls that are based on old Norwegian folklore. And they document a few incidences running into them. And I think this is a cool movie. Like, I think it doesn't take itself too seriously. It's pretty comedic in some of the interview with the troll hunter, where he's kind of explaining his art. He's explaining what he does in his role as a troll hunter, and the different ways that he hunts trolls and things like that. And it's just ridiculous. I mean, it's really funny.
Yeah.
I don't
not taking things seriously.
This movie was way better than I thought it was going to be. Sure.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's unfair of me to really love this movie and really and not like Cloverfield that much, but I think that the reason is that you don't see the trolls as often. I don't know, the documentary makers like don't get attacked really as much, and they have a lot of time in between the different instances where you kind of you feel the passage of time, and you have time to like laugh at it, at the whole concept, so it's not as serious the whole time.
I feel like this movie may have been influenced a lot by Cloverfield, though.
That's probably true.
This came out 2 years after Cloverfield, and there's so much. They're so similar in what they are. You've got a monster movie where they're, you know, you've got epic monsters, and then you're shooting it in that same style. I don't feel like it's a copy by any means. But they're definitely similar. They're noticeably similar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's the found footage style. And at the beginning of Troll Hunter, it has those title cards talking about how they found this footage, and they spent a lot of time determining if it was fake or authentic. And then it says it was determined to be authentic. I think they should not have put that line there. Although, I don't know, maybe they're just poking at it, saying, of course, this isn't real, so we're just going to go over the top by saying it is.
Yeah.
I don't know, but
that's kind of what I took that as.
Yeah, but I think the reason, for me anyway, I loved this movie. It was about what I expected, and I had so much fun watching it, and I loved every second of it. And I think the reason why I like this one more, and I think it's better than Cloverfield, is because with this one, it's an actual documentary film crew. They're out to be journalists to get the story, whereas in Cloverfield, you've got just a dude with a camera who happens to be there. So the guys in Troll Hunter, they have that sense of purpose. Like they need to go out and capture the footage. And every time the people in Troll Hunter are in danger, they're not the ones in control of the situation. They're kind of under the authority of the Troll Hunter guy. Like he's the one telling them what to do, or they're in his vehicle and he's, you know, chasing down the trolls. So it makes sense for them to be there and not trying to get away. So it's the holes that we're seeing in Cloverfield are not necessarily here in Trollhunter.
This is more like a Discovery Channel, you know, sort of documentary on some crazy species that ends up being trolls somehow. I wasn't kind of sold on the fact that he just switches from being so hardline, like, I don't want to fucking talk to you, quit following me, you people with the camera, to being like, okay, I'm just going to spill my heart and soul. He just clicks. But there's really no reason why he did that. I don't know. That stuck out to me. But at the same time, I laughed my ass off watching this movie. The paperwork that he has to fill out every time he kills a troll, you know, the TSS. It was so ridiculous. I thought it was so... I don't know.
Yeah, see, I guess it's those elements where you get a break to stop and, you know, like, think about, like, wow, this is really funny, you know? And in that way, it's kind of like a mockumentary sometimes. Sometimes it feels, it has that feel, kind of like Man Bites Dog or something, where you're laughing at just, you know, how different this guy's life is. Well, it has, like, similarities, but how different it is from my experience. And then you go back in, and I think that when you do see the trolls, it is CGI, but it's pretty good for being CGI, and those moments are pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought the design of all the trolls was just brilliant.
And I feel like it kind of plays on old ideas of what trolls are, and I kind of had this sense that I'm not completely certain of, but that I kind of had a sense that it plays on a lot of older Norwegian folklore or something like that, things that are part of the culture of where this movie's made and where it comes from.
Yeah.
There were definitely some throwbacks to what I know about trolls, like living under a bridge, because there was the you know, there's that scene with the sheep, you know, where they're under a bridge. So, I mean, it was obviously, I think they did that, you know, and there's, you know, he talks about that bridge getting taken out and the troll ran into it, things like that. So I think there definitely are throwbacks to classic troll fairy tale stories.
And speaking of the sheep, did you notice there was three of them? As in, like, the three Billy Goats Gruff?
I didn't think about that. I
hadn't.
I didn't think too deeply about anything in this movie.
That's something that hit me later when I was writing out notes for the film, thinking, and I put down the number three, and I was like, wait a minute, three Billy Goats Gruff. That's hilarious.
This movie made me want to go to Norway, if that's where it was shot.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It looked so beautiful.
Yeah, if anything, this is a great, like, tourism incentive, you know? I mean, come for the beauty of the scenery, you know, but stay for the trolls.
I thought it was great. I thought it was hilarious that the guy ends up getting killed because he believes in Jesus Christ.
That's part of the folklore. I mean, the way I always heard it was, I smell the blood of an Englishman instead of a Christian man. So the rhyme must be different in Norway. But that's also something that's interesting to me, is that, especially in that part of Scandinavia, like, religion isn't prominent.
No.
So we have four characters, and three of them are not Christian, which is probably a pretty good representation of the demographic of that area.
They don't believe in any god.
Yeah, you do the same film anywhere in the state, and it's like, you know, let's say all four of them are Christian, but three of them are fundamentalists.
Yeah, and it's pretty great when they're worrying about, like, well, she's Muslim, will that work? I honestly know.
Yeah, that was really funny.
Yeah, it was funny. I laughed more than I should have. I think false paperwork and the bureaucracy of the troll hunters, I don't know, it's just so funny to me.
Yeah, all the little details.
Yeah, it's got check boxes.
For me, it kind of struck a Jurassic Park chord, where it's like, what would it be like if these creatures that we only hear from stories and myths, like, existed, like, in this modern context, and how would you deal with that? You know, it was fun in the same way as, like, the first time I watched Jurassic Park, thinking, like, wow, how cool would it be if I saw a dinosaur? But I mean, I don't know anything about trolls, but that's what I'm saying, is, like, if I knew more about trolls, was maybe from Norway and knew some myths that, or I mean, not myths, but, like, some rumor that they had different preferences of who to eat according to their face, that this movie would be like maybe even more entertaining than it was.
And this movie was made for a ridiculously low amount of money.
Surprisingly
like less than $500,000, I think, which is remarkable because to me it stood out on the same like production value wise with Cloverfield, to tell you the truth.
Oh yeah.
And one cost a couple hundred thousand dollars and the other one cost $25 million. So I don't know. Very impressive work.
Definitely.
One thing that I thought really helped the effectiveness of the film is whenever the camera was in the hands of someone else, the shooting style was different. Like I noticed after the first cameraman gets offed and the Muslim girl shows up to run the camera, after that point, there is a series of establishing shots where you know, she's got a long shot of like the car moving in the distance or of the cabin they're staying in, which hadn't happened at any point prior to that. So it's like they really thought about, okay, this is a different camera person. This is going to have different technique. So we got to show that. It feels like to me they thought of everything. Like they really just thought all this out.
Yeah, I had noticed that. But now I feel justified in liking the movie more. Where
yeah.
there's a difference in attention to detail than Cloverfield, maybe.
Well, I think this one has more replay value.
Agree.
I've seen it twice already, once in theaters, and I've shown it to people once. And I'm always talking about this movie when people ask for a comedy at the Tower. I'm like, well, have you heard of Troll Hunter? Because even though there are action-packed parts where they're escaping attack from a troll, I think it's more a comedy than anything else.
Yeah.
The brilliance of it is it's played straight. I mean, I think the best comedy is comedy that's played straight, where it's not trying to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
But the comedy is just inherent within the subject matter.
I also thought it was interesting the way that they killed some of the trolls explode, and they had a description for why, like the medical reasons for why some would turn to stone and some would blow up. That's that kind of shit that made me love this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I laughed hysterically when the veterinarian was describing why. And I honestly didn't believe when you know they're like who you're on the phone with. He's like a veterinarian, you know. I'm like bullshit. Of course he's not on the phone with a veterinarian. He really ends up being on the phone with one. You know, he really is just trying to get blood from this troll. I don't know. And when he gets smacked on that bridge, I thought he was dead. I thought
that was crazy.
I thought he was toast, and I was like, shit, this movie just got way gnarlier. I mean, it's a red herring, but I don't know. I was massively entertained by this movie.
So much fun.
Great call, which is so surprising because the original pick for this was Troll 2, and so you stuck with Troll. You struck with Troll, and I was just like, oh god, he swapped a troll for another troll. And
yeah,
I'm so glad you did.
Well, I think watching Troll 2 could have been cool because I've never seen it, but I don't know.
Better saved for like a shitty movie theme.
I have a feeling that we would have been like, god, this movie sucked. As opposed to this one where we're all really into it.
Yeah,
I think I changed my mind when you went with Cloverfield for sure. And I was like, well, I think the compare and contrast between the two might be cool. So, and I'd only seen it once, and I wanted to see it again with some friends. So.
Ah.
Yeah, good call.
Well done. We have one more, right? Unless we have more to say about this guy.
I think we can move to The Thing.
Yep.
Yeah. Speaking of fun movies,
mm-hmm.
The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing, and this is kind of good timing that we're talking about this now, since the I guess it's a prequel that they made is coming out.
What?
Later in October? Yeah, you didn't know about this?
Yeah.
Oh God. Who's
yeah, it's
making
got the
it,
same
though?
Title.
Yeah, it's called The Thing.
It's not him,
yeah.
Though, is it?
No,
Carpenter's
not John Carpenter. No, he has nothing to do with it. It's coming out in October. It's from everything I've understood, it's actual the telling of the Norwegian camp and what happened there.
Oh.
And discovering the alien and what happens over at the Norwegian camp before the Americans get over there. Before
is
the opening of Carpenter's The Thing. So it could be interesting. I don't have hopes on it. I'm sure it'll be good for what it is. It's probably just gonna be more of an action alien thriller.
I think it's going to get rid of what makes this movie great, but...
Yeah,
well,
see,
I think it's
going to
be completely...
I'm nervous that it's going to be a lot of CGI.
Yeah.
Which is one of Well, I don't. Maybe I'll let Isaac get into this. But one of the cool things about the Thing, the original,
Is that it's we still haven't let him. We haven't let him do his intro yet.
No, yeah, true. The Thing. It's about scientists in Antarctica, where the opening of the film is just a dog running across the Antarctic snow, being chased by a helicopter, and it's being shot at by the guys in the helicopter, and you have no idea why. They get to this American camp of researchers and just are crazy, trying to just destroy this dog and end up blowing up their own helicopter and shooting one of the American scientists. And then, shit gets crazy. The dog gets put in a kennel with other dogs and starts mutating into this crazy tentacled monster. And at that point, you're in for a treat.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just remember, first time I saw this, I was just in love with it because it's just so much fun to watch. Probably because the effects are all practical. There isn't an element of computer graphics in this film, I don't think. Everything's done practically.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was made in the Timor ILM.
Correctly.
Yeah. This is ILM pre tons of CGI. I'm pretty sure ILM did this.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I like about the movie is it's kind of this, action, alien movie, kind of suspenseful. But a lot of time in the movie is spent in, alien dissections. And you see some of the gnarliest, weirdest stuff. And they're always, there'll be an attack, and then they, dissect and they learn more about the being. And it almost feels like it has the same kind of feeling as a zombie movie or something, where some of the coolest parts of this movie are seeing the insides of creatures and they're pulling out these organs and things, and it's so cool.
Pretty impressive effects for sure.
Yeah, and I think the best part of all that, the goopy remains, is it's never really clear what it is or what it's supposed to be. And you're never really given a clear shot of it. The camera never stays on it for long. So there's always this kind of feeling of mystery about it. What is it? I mean, even in the scenes where you see it, transforming into different things, the lights are out and there's shadow. So you're never really getting a clear picture of the Thing.
Yeah.
I think that's the beauty of the title too, is what, what else is it? It's the Thing. You don't know what to call it because it keeps changing and it keeps, consuming and taking the place of people in the camp. And I think that's another scary element of it, is the Thing could be the person you're standing next to. You don't know. And so there's that psychological element that really intensifies and elevates the enjoyment of the film.
This movie, it was the second time I tried to watch this movie. The first time I tried, I fell asleep because I just started to way too late. Wasn't ready to watch it. I'm glad I rewatched it this time because it was way less of an action movie than I thought it was going to be. You basically end up with a thriller between people trying to figure out, are you really this creature? Are you imitating this creature? Are you really you? And they're trying to figure out ways to do that. And, when the Thing's always one step ahead of them, we should check this blood, And then they go to the blood locker and it's destroyed, So it's a mind game, and they end up locking one guy out into a shed, and it's brilliant.
That's Wilfred Brimley.
Yeah.
Diabetes.
My dog.
I don't want to be in here anymore.
Yeah. My dog watched this movie with me, and it was strange. He was up against the TV from the opening scene where it's this dog running, and he's just staring at it. And just watching this dog run across the snow, and he just sat on the couch with me and watched this movie.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Enjoyable for all species.
Yeah. It was so weird because he was just riveted on it. I think it's because there's, kennels full of dogs and everything, and there's dogs hanging out. It's just strange.
No, I had kind of a similar experience. When the dog started freaking out in the kennel and started barking, both of my dogs perked up and started looking at the screen and, tilting their heads. What's going on?
Yeah. They don't care about humans
in
movies.
I kind of want to talk about something that Isaac said about the way that it builds suspense, because you don't really see the Thing attack people very often. A lot of times the really spikes in suspense and action are just the Thing mutating and changing and busting apart and was like staring there, and then they'll hit it with a flamethrower and kill it, and it didn't really attack anyone or rip any heads off or anything like that. Very different from most action movies, but those scenes I was more thrilled about than most action movies. I kind of hate action movies, actually, but those scenes were so cool, and I was just like, my eyes were wide, and I was just staring at the screen. And I think that it's a different kind of suspense than the kind of, oh, that thing's going to attack me, and I know how it's going to. All of the attacks kind of happen off screen, and then it's afterwards, like, how did it attack people? Like, what did it look like when it did? You have that wonder that causes you the kind of suspense and fear.
Yeah. When I was watching this, it kind of reminded me, and this is weird, of 12 Angry Men again, because you basically ended up with a bunch of scenes of dialogue of characters trying to hash out the truth about something. And it's something that you can't really prove that easily. And I loved it. I thought it was so well done.
That is an interesting comparison. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's why I'm really afraid of there being a prequel to this movie, because I feel like what made this movie so good was really the dialogue between the people trying to figure out who could possibly be the thing or not. You know, I was afraid this was going to end up just being a monster running around all the time, which it isn't really. I mean, what it ends up being is the thing's imitating human beings a lot of the movie, and you're trying to figure out if that's really the character or not.
Yeah, and it's the human beings turning on each other trying to figure it out. I mean, I can't imagine that the new thing coming out doesn't have elements of that, because it's a shape-shifting alien, so I'm sure that's going to be touched on. And I guess I'm not opposed to a prequel. I would be outright opposed if it was a remake. You can't really touch this. The thing holds up.
What's the point? Why would you ever try to remake this movie? George Lucas might, but...
It's kind of silly to say that, because the thing, John Carpenter's The Thing, is actual remake of another movie.
Really?
What, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I think I remember hearing that.
I think it's called The Thing. It's like an old movie. It's like, I think, early 40s. Black and white.
There's The Thing from Another World, maybe?
It can't be close to the same story, though. It's going to have to be changed a lot, because I don't think many people were hanging out on Antarctica and had colonies there in the 1940s. And you don't have helicopters or anything close to that, you know? But what he's talking about, this prequel, is literally in the exact same universe. It's the camp that's just across, you know, just a little bit of ways.
Oh, no. Yeah. Sorry, I found it. The Thing from Another World, 1951, scientists and American Air Force officials fend off a bloodthirsty alien organism while at a remote Arctic outpost.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Shit.
I've heard it's pretty good.
We're going to have to watch it.
That's pretty crazy.
Maybe we'll have to dedicate a whole episode just to the remake and the prequel and the inspiration.
The three things. 12 angry things.
12 angry things. 3 angry things.
If the new The Thing is any good anyway. If it's not, then, well, even if it's not, it might be worth talking about.
It just caught me off guard that this movie was as good as it was. I don't know why.
Yeah, me too. Like, I don't know, like, what the expectations are, or, I mean, you see Kurt Russell with that beard, and you're like, oh, okay, where's this going? Oh, and his ridiculous hat for the piloting, like how gigantic that hat was. What was the point of that? I think that's just either John Carpenter or Kurt Russell saying, all right, let's have some fun with this.
Yeah. I think I want to pick up the Blu-ray of this guy.
I have it. It's awesome.
Yeah, well, damn you.
Damn me, indeed. I think one of the first I picked up, because I knew I wanted it.
Definitely approve.
Yeah, it doesn't get old. And it has, I think, one of the best, like, you know, final attack lines shouted at any kind of villain ever. Oh, yeah, well, fuck you, too.
What is that? Does that ring home? Is that what you would say?
I don't know. I mean, it's like, what else would you say in that? I mean, a monster pops up out of the ground, and you're like, all right, fuck you too. And then you throw some dynamite at it, and you get out of there.
What did you guys think about the ending? The ending was kind of weird to me.
I had called it. I knew it was that bastard out in the shed, you know, that he was the first one. I don't know. I liked the ending because I had been trying to figure out who the thing was this whole movie, or who was actually, you know, actually infected. And I was right most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought the ending was great.
Because it's kind of ambiguous. I mean, what's going to happen to these guys? They're probably going to freeze death.
Yeah, it's just, to me, I assume they're all dead. And that was the whole point, is to die and not let this thing escape.
Yeah, but even if one of these two, if MacReady or I think it's Childs, right? If either of them are the thing and they freeze to death, when they get discovered, they might get de-thawed and we have, you know, world domination again.
Yeah, exactly.
I kind of assumed they were all going to die.
Like, is it even over? Like, there might still be a thing out there.
And I think that was a great way to end it. I mean, I love the ambiguity of that because it keeps that psychological level still, you know, clicking in your brain.
Yeah.
I don't think this movie would be as effective if there was, you know, a clear, concise, you know, clean ending. Although that would probably be everyone dying.
Yeah, I feel like I need to watch more John Carpenter movies after this, though. Are any of them good? I've never seen Escape from New York or L.A., but I know they're both Kurt Russell.
Yeah, me either. I felt the exact same way after the first time I saw this. I was like, I got to give John Carpenter a serious shot, because this is one of the most fun experiences of film watching I've ever had.
Mm-hmm. He did the Halloweens, right?
L.A. What's
he
that?
Did the original Halloween. I've seen that. I don't know, maybe I wasn't in the right mood, but I remember thinking this isn't all it's cracked up to be.
Hmm.
I did appreciate
Escape from New York I've seen.
I haven't seen it. You know, because Kurt Russell, I mean, the only Kurt Russell movies I've ever really seen are like Disney movies that he made in the 60s.
John Carpenter also did the original Assault on Precinct 13, which I've heard is pretty exceptional.
Yeah, the remake looked crappy. I didn't see it.
Yeah, yeah. Big Trouble in Little China, of course.
Yeah.
One of his classic films. I've only seen parts of that on TV, but I really want to give it a serious shot.
Holy shit, this guy did Dark Star. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Probably not my kind of filmmaker, but I think he kind of hits it every now and then, you know, with something surprising.
It looks like it's mostly horror stuff that he's done. Or, you know,
horror and action.
But this movie doesn't feel like a horror movie to me at all. It's to me, it's more of a character piece, to tell you honestly. It's what would you do if you weren't sure other people were infected with this thing and you have to solve this problem?
No, I'd say it's more of a psychological thriller.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because you look at Wilford Brimley's character and how he reacts when he does, you know, those... Now, it was funny to see how he's doing those computations on the computer, because that computer screen is so archaic. It's just so, you know, ancient history and primitive based on what we're used to now. But that was, you know, that was the technology at the time. And then to see him react, saying, you know, this is going to take over the world. And I think it said like 1,000 something days, which is like 3 or something years if it just continued like it did. And he decides, okay, this, we got to shut the whole thing down. We got to take everyone out. We're not getting out of here alive. I can see that being an actual, you know, real response to that information.
Which is, this is going to kill everybody.
Yeah.
We can't let it escape. Yeah.
The only way to stop it is to kill everyone and destroy the camp. Which I think if I was in that position and I knew that about the thing, I would probably go for that. I mean, it's kind of a situation where, you know, world preservation probably supersedes self-preservation.
But then he, instead of going out and, like, pulling a serial killer thing, he like starts smashing computers first and gets thwarted. Like, seems like he kind of lost his mind. Like, he should have started axing people, just hoping that he got the thing.
Well,
but
the problem was he was the thing.
But who knows at what point he became the thing?
I'm pretty sure I felt like when he was dissecting it is when he became the thing.
I thought it was after, because that seems like a wholly human thing to do. Why would an alien at that point want to get locked up or get stopped? Why would he want to smash the computers? Like,
good point.
I don't know. He had to have been turned sometime while he was out there in the bunker when he was locked up or whatever.
I don't know. See, that this is the kind of speculation I really don't care to delve into, because I mean, I enjoy the film for what it is, and I don't think it's trying to be clear on when anyone turns. And that's part of the fun, I guess, is not the not knowing.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm I'm trying to figure it out. When I'm watching this movie, I'm trying to figure out, is that guy, when would he have gotten infected, you know? What was he around?
Yeah.
Was he around those dogs, you know?
It was interesting when Burt Reynolds, you know, were following him mostly. And then
Burt Reynolds.
So I do that every time.
Kurt Russell?
Yeah. I don't know why. I think it's just because it's Kurt and Bert, but, like, I make that mistake more often than I want to. Well, I opt never to, but I don't know why I've said,
all right.
I've said that before.
Kurt Russell
but,
episode. On.
Yeah, I feel like he takes off for a second, and then he comes back, and I was really – because then he becomes kind of the protagonist again. You're, like, following him, but I – felt like he might have been a thing then, and I was like really leery of him.
Yeah, there might be something to that, because when he's testing the blood, he's holding the petri dish in his own hand and he's controlling the copper wire.
He does it.
And there's a difference.
Does his
like
own,
if you,
though.
Yeah, he does his own, but because it's in his possession, with you know, on his person, there might be a chance he's able to not react the way the other blood does.
Is that scene after he goes out and was lost, or before?
Yeah, well, that's after he comes back and he's like, "Okay, we're going to do this, and we're gonna test everybody."
Yeah, after he just knocks a few people out that he suspects.
Yeah, I think you could make a case that he might be, but at the same time, it's like, does it really matter?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. What's funny to me is. The monster in this film is smaller and is made by practical effects, and I found, you know, infinitely more terrifying than the monsters in the other two films.
Yeah.
I wasn't really scared of the monsters in Troll Hunter.
Well, no.
The lead guy that they're following around, his confidence, you know. I mean, I definitely thought he was toast on that bridge, but I kind of wasn't scared of those monsters at all. I felt like he had it under control most of the time. Whereas in Cloverfield, they're fucked all the time. And in The Thing, it's not the thing that they're really worried about. Well, I guess it is the thing that they're worried about, but it's not CGI. It could be a person.
Exactly.
You know?
But when you saw The Thing, like, in its form or halfway between forms, I think just the foreignness of it. Like, sometimes it has way too many limbs. It's always busting apart, and it's always a complete surprise. I think those are the elements, just the complete variable. Like, this thing could be anything. It could be anyone. It could do anything. It is why I was way more creeped out by it. That thing was terrifying.
Yeah. I'm definitely kind of a less is more when it comes to visual effects that are obviously CGI.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a lot better, you know. It gets better and better each year. I mean, look at Troll Hunter versus Cloverfield, especially with the budget constraints. And I think Troll Hunter is actually, you know, the winner in between those two. But nothing really can replace practical effects. When you're actually seeing it and you know it's whatever's there, whatever they did to make that, it's real. I mean, you don't have to trick your brain into thinking it's real because there it is. You're seeing it.
But how do you feel about movies that have completely CGI characters? Can you deal with that?
Give me an example.
Lord of the Rings.
Oh, Lord of the Rings. I mean, that's a whole different beast because the entire thing is fantastical. I mean, the entire look of the films look fantasy. They look ethereal and kind of out of the imagination of you know, someone, as opposed to, let's say we put Sméagol in any kind of realistic looking movie, you know, put Gollum in The Thing, and it's not going to work.
Yeah, I guess that's
well,
true.
I still think I would prefer you know, something real over CGI. Even then, like, Sméagol stands out a little bit at least.
Oh yeah.
In Lord of the Rings, as
I don't
does,
like it. Yeah.
You know, you compare old Yoda to new Yoda, and it's so much more fun to look at old Yoda, and it makes the old Star Wars movies way better.
Well, even in general, they feel like you see an X-Wing and you see a swamp that's all smoky, and it's real smoke and a real swamp, and it looks like water for real, you know, when they're on the whatever the hell the planet's called.
Dagobah.
So when they're actually on Dagobah, they're actually on Dagobah. And the new ones, I mean, they're standing in a soundstage with blue around them.
And you can tell.
You can definitely tell that it's added later, and it doesn't work.
Well, I mean, it works for those who want it to work, who want that fantasy world.
It doesn't look as good. It doesn't feel as real.
No, it doesn't feel as real. But
it doesn't create the illusion.
With people who actually enjoy the prequels, I don't think they're necessarily looking for that authentic feel that was, you know, in the original trilogy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
When they're actually in the, you know, the Millennium Falcon, you see the dirt and the grime, and it looks like a junk ship that's been around for a real long time. No, it doesn't look like this crisp form CGI plane, right. You know, or this world that get painted in later.
I don't know. But I mean, you look at a film like Avatar, where, I mean, I actually haven't seen it. I've seen parts of it on TV, on HBO or something. And the parts I saw were, I'm looking at these obviously fully CGI characters, even though the CGI, you know, the technology is superb. There's just a certain degree of authenticity that is just not there. And it just puts a wall between me and the, you know, enjoyment of the film, I think.
Yeah.
But going back to Lord of the Rings, I think Gollum actually fits better in that kind of context, because he fits the tone and the look of the overall film. And like the backgrounds and everything are all practically CGI anyway. To me, it's almost like the human characters look more out of place than the CGI characters in Lord of the Rings.
It's more of an animated picture to you than it is in, you know, a live action movie.
Yeah,
which is kind of how the new Star Wars feel. I think the thing about it is that you can just compare and contrast the old series to the new one, and the old series is so much better. And I don't know. I think George Lucas works better when he can't do everything he wants.
Yeah, well, and I've heard people, yeah, that's true. I've heard people argue that, you know, at the time that Star Wars was being made, he was, well, I guess that's probably not true, but he was employing some of the most modern techniques that there were at the time. And it's just to us now that it's kind of like the old school way of doing it. And then he wanted to make some movies, you know, a couple decades later, and he did the same thing, wanted to employ the new technology that was coming out at the time. And I've heard that he's hoping to do some 3D things in the future.
They've actually been working on 3D versions of all six films to be put out in theaters over the next couple of years.
He's going to mine them again. So now that you can buy them on Blu-ray, just wait until you can buy them 3D on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I've got the versions I want, and I'm never going to give Lucas another dime.
Dude, I've got the original Star Wars. I've got a 1977 VHS of it. That's where I'm sticking.
I doubt it's a 1977 VHS, but I think what you mean is a 1997 version of the film on VHS.
I don't know. I don't think so. It's got it doesn't have the remastered or whatever, the gold case.
The original cut. Is it letterboxed or is it frame?
Letterboxed? What's that?
It's where it's the widescreen and it's got the black on the top and the bottom. Or is it, does it fit
no,
a TV?
No, it's not that. But it might be a more modern full screen, but I assumed that it was old because it's got the kind of like painting style cover.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think VHS was even remotely even popular until the early 80s, was it?
Yeah, you really couldn't.
Oh, that might be true.
Until the mid 80s.
Yeah.
But I don't even think Star Wars came out on VHS. I probably guess your VHS is from the 90s. Because I know the original cuts were put out on VHS in the 90s, as well as the redos, the special editions.
Yeah. I definitely have the original box set VHS style.
I wasn't aware that they did the original cut in the 90s. I only knew about the special edition with the gold. So maybe it is from the 90s, but I don't know. I was looking for a copyright on it, and I only saw like the 77 or whatever.
That's when the movie came out. So that's when it was released. Look at this tangent, dude, from The Thing to Star Wars. Damn you, Lucas.
Damn you. Just because the Blu-rays just came out, and there's all the shitload of controversy about even more changes that he's made.
I can't believe it. He replaced Yoda. He replaced Yoda. And the no. He added a random no, and he added bullshit to the Jawas. He just keeps fucking it up.
And if people excuse this by saying, well, now, you know, he's making the changes because, you know, that's the way he wanted it back then, but he didn't have the technology. But then he goes and does and adds audio of, you know, Darth Vader saying no at a crucial part where you don't know what he's going to do. There's no way he wanted it that way, because that's something he could have done at the time.
Yep.
Exactly. I don't know.
It's kind of like what you were talking about with that Fight Club amendment when they went, or was it Fight Club? I believe so.
Yeah, it was.
And
Fight
they
Club.
Just
yeah.
amended like a small thing on the wall in the background.
Yeah, it was a thermostat in the background that, in the cutscenes, would switch from black to white because they had to do a reshoot, and then on the Blu-ray they went back and fixed it so it's black each cut.
It might be something that George Lucas is like, man, I really wish I could do that now. And he's putting it out again, so he's like, well, maybe I should.
In fairness,
I think this kind of thing is different.
In fairness, like, I think changing something on a wall is different than shooting somebody first or not, or adding new dialogue.
Yeah, a detail in the background is not going to change anything as far as the emotional depth of the film. Whereas what Lucas has added in Jedi now, with Darth Vader saying no, while the Emperor's killing Luke, it completely eliminates the tension of the scene. Because you don't know what Darth's going to do. All you do is see him look back and forth, and then he goes and grabs the Emperor and throws him down the well or whatever. But now you know he's going to do it before he does it. And it completely nullifies the emotional depth of the scene. I mean, it essentially ruins that moment of the film. There's no way, I think, that a reasonable filmmaker would think that was a good idea.
Well, it wasn't his movie to begin with.
I could see him thinking that, though. I could see George Lucas thinking that because of the obviousness of the dialogue that he writes. He's always like, I got to spell it right out for him. he might have been looking at that scene and being like, it's not obvious enough. They don't know why he's picking up the Emperor. And just like completely missed it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, he's not a reasonable filmmaker. Essentially, what he's done, I think he made the original three were great fantasy dramas, kind of, action films. Well, not even that necessarily, but they worked on an adult level. The prequels are kids' movies, and now he's gone back and attempted to make the original three on the same level as the new three, dumbing it down so they're kids' movies. Of course, Han can't shoot first because that's such a bad example, because the kids can't have a bad example.
Dude, Han shot first. Fact.
Absolutely, he did. I mean, by changing that, you destroy the character. He's no longer the same person. So I don't know. It's changing a detail in the background is one thing. Completely changing the tone and story and impact of a film is something different.
Agreed.
So, I don't know.
Back to the thing. George Lucas is a monster.
It sucks, though, because I really want to watch the original three on Blu-ray. But,
yeah, not going to happen.
God damn it. This is such a
Well, I don't know. He has said on every single new issue, you know, he wasn't going to put them out on DVD at first, and then he did, and then he wasn't going to put out the original cuts, the theatrical cuts on DVD, and then he did. He wasn't going to put them out on Blu-ray, and then he did. So I imagine the original cuts will come out on Blu-ray at some point, because it's more money for him. Why not do it?
People
are going to be complaining about this forever and asking for them on the original cut on Blu-ray. He'll cave eventually.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. He'll actually get some money from me if he does. But for now, I've got the DVD copies of the original theatrical cuts, so I'm fine with that.
It's funny. I usually love special editions like the director's cuts because it usually feels like that their original version wasn't released because of studio interference. With him, it's the exact opposite. He's just being a jackass and editing.
Yeah, I mean, usually director's cuts are when the director goes back and puts back in stuff he shot that he thought was necessary or thought made the film better. George Lucas is going back and putting in new stuff, new creative material. That's totally different.
Well, that's because he's more of a producer than anything else. He sucks as a writer.
Oh, yeah.
And a director. I mean, the best one was done by his film teacher, for God's sake. Oh, man.
No, that's a whole different episode, I guess.
Back to the thing.
You know, I'm probably going to keep all that in because that's fun.
Well, dude, it's hard. It's hard to not bitch out George Lucas every once in a while. All in all, exactly. I thought all three of the movies from Monsters were enjoyable to watch. I wasn't bummed about watching any of them. Actually, I think there were probably three of the movies that I enjoyed watching the most because they're all kind of thrillers. You kind of just strap in and hold on for the ride. The Thing, I think, was a little bit deeper for me because I was trying to figure stuff out, but not a whole lot. It's not like any of these are really character pieces, you know.
And they all work on different levels, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's true. I think The Thing was my favorite to watch. Just, like, the most shocking, kept me on the edge of my seat. And I hate the 80s, and I hate action movies, but... Well, I don't know. But I don't know. It was just such a great movie. And then Troll Hunter was really funny, which you don't expect that much from a monster movie. So I think a good group of movies there.
Yeah, I had fun watching all three of these.
To get involved in the discussion, you can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/threefilmegos. Follow us on Twitter, @threefilmegos, or email us at threefilmegos@gmail.com. You can also comment at threefilmegos.podomatic.com, where you can also donate and subscribe to the show. Music provided by 90s Television. You can hear more of their music on Facebook. On our next episode, Romero Thon, Part 1. We've been the Three Filmegos. Thanks for listening.